We promote human rights not because any one administration says it's important or not.
A member of Congress tells about top issues in the U.S.-Vietnam relationship. It's Wednesday, March 29th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us, too, online for VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, an American airline flies deeper into China's market. Small business loans in Cambodia may dry up. Watch your step while visiting Myanmar. And a place where you can pick up faint signals from space, but not the internet. You're picking us up right now on VOA Asia. Since taking office in January, we have not heard much from President Donald Trump on relations with Vietnam. He's only been in the White House for a short time, but that does not mean that elected officials are ignoring the Southeast Asian nation. Alan Lowenthal is a Democratic congressman from the 47th District in California. He's a member of the Congressional Caucus on Vietnam, and he shared his thoughts recently with VOA Vietnamese reporters on how the United States is approaching trade and human rights with Hanoi.
I think that we must continue to the United States to demand that Vietnam engage in protecting the human rights of its citizens, whether it's greater relationships with the United States. I think we should be asking that they protect the religious rights of its citizens, the rights of bloggers to dissent, labor activists to demand independent labor unions, environmentalists to demand real compensation or compensation for the Formosa tragedy, that religious leaders such as the patriarch Thich Quang Do, who's been under house arrest, be allowed to practice. So there's a variety of things that we would like to continue, and what I'd like to do as one of the co-chairs is to keep the caucus focused on Vietnam, and that we want to see great changes in the rights of human rights of the citizens of Vietnam.
For many years, you already have had various meetings and discussions with the Vietnamese authorities.
Yes.
What are the issues that you ask them to make progress, and what have they responded to you?
Well, I went to Vietnam, challenged the Vietnamese government that I would not be supportive of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which Vietnam wanted to join unless Vietnam made the kinds of changes, human rights changes, labor rights changes, environmental rights changes. And we'll continue to do that. I think that under the new administration, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is taken off the table, but I think what will be on the negotiating table will be the kinds of trade agreements that we develop with Vietnam. And I really want this administration to champion human rights as well as economic rights of Americans if we're going to have a trading relationship or increase trade with Vietnam. So I think that's critically important that we do that as part of a caucus.
Mr. Trump, the new president, has not directly mentioned human rights in his speeches and statements. So do you see that as a lack of interest in human rights by the Trump administration? How will that affect your effort to promote human rights in Vietnam?
We will continue to promote human rights. We promote human rights not because any one administration says it's important or not. We support human rights as a basic American principle that should be part of our foreign policy throughout the world. I just am aware because of the, you know, of the many Vietnamese Americans who were either born in Vietnam or in the United States, whose many families who still remain in Vietnam or they themselves fled as part of the diaspora, who really want a better relationship with Vietnam. And it's really up to the Vietnamese government to stop much of its oppressive actions against its own people. And so we're going to keep advocating that this administration, you're right, has not focused on human rights. And that's our role in Congress as the Vietnamese caucus, as a co-equal branch with the administration, that the Congress wants the administration to work on these issues. And we're going to, you know, work with the administration to focus with the Secretary of State and others to focus on these issues. It's critically important that human rights become part of the American foreign policy objectives.
Alan Lowenthal, a Democratic congressman from California and a member of the Congressional Caucus on Vietnam. Coming up, you may have greater opportunities to fly as the skies widen for Chinese and American air carriers. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on VOAnews.com. Police killings prompt China to urge France to protect its Chinese community. Malaysia says Kim Jong-nam's body still in the country. A report says China's man-made South China Sea islands nearly complete. Indonesian tax amnesty makes final push for overseas assets. Samsung says it plans to sell refurbished Galaxy Note 7 phones. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, be sure to visit our VOAnews.com website. We continue now with VOA Asia. American Airlines has become the latest American carrier to purchase a stake in a Chinese airline to tap into the lucrative and growing Chinese travel market. American announced it is buying a stake in China Southern following similar deals between Delta and China Eastern and United and Air China. Jeffrey Thomas is editor of the Australia-based AirlineRatings.com, and he tells VOA's Victor Beatty the Chinese domestic air travel market is set to become the largest by 2025, perhaps earlier.
Booming market. A lot of Chinese are now also traveling overseas, and one of their favorite destinations is the United States. So buying a slice in China Southern, which is the largest airline in China, is a very smart move.
Well, how will this agreement work to get American in the Chinese market?
It's a $200 million stake, which is about 2.76% approximately of the stock on offer. It's only a small stake. It's more symbolic in that sense, if you like. But what it gives them is code sharing with China Southern, collaboration on sales, passenger loyalty program integration. It really weds the two airlines together. So American, by taking this small stake, is wedded now to the largest and, some would argue, best airline in China. China Southern has a very, very good reputation. It's the largest airline in Asia, has 522 aircraft, serves 190 destinations. They're an airline on the move and very important commercially too, because their major hubs are in southern China, adjacent to Hong Kong, which is the engine room of China's economy. Very much a lot of synergies with American, which is very much a business airline. So there's a lot of synergies in this. It makes a lot of sense.
This is the third major U.S. carrier to enter the Chinese market. Delta, of course, reaching a deal about 2 years ago with China Eastern, while United has had a long-standing relationship with Air China. U.S. carriers are taking China seriously.
China is a very important market. It's a very exciting country. And for those who haven't been to China, it's well worth a visit. It's a fascinating place. But one of the things here we're seeing is that I think the number is something like it's about 10 times more Chinese are going to the United States than U.S. citizens are going to China. I mean, China's the fifth biggest source of tourists into the United States, and by 2020, it's forecast they'll be third behind Mexico and Canada, your neighbors. They'll be the third biggest source of international travelers. So it's a very big market, it's a very exciting market, and a fascinating place to go to.
Jeffrey Thomas said China has the air travel infrastructure to attract more Americans, including a stellar safety record, a modern fleet of Boeing and Airbus aircraft, stunning airports, and a modern train system. For its part, China said it wants to improve the efficiency and competitiveness of its state-owned air carriers by pushing more strategic investment from private capital. You're listening to VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, Cyclone Debby made landfall in Australia's northern Queensland state. Winds and strong surf damaged homes, wrecked jetties, and cut power to thousands of residents. The storm may bring 50 centimeters of rain and cause major river flooding this week. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy to have you with us on VOA Asia.
Just months ahead of local elections, the Cambodian government has ordered the microfinance industry to cap the interest rate on new loans at 18% a year. Now, borrowers will probably applaud that, at least in the short term. The decision, though, has rocked the industry, which fears that some firms will go bankrupt. And that end result could be fewer small loans for villagers who will then be driven into the hands of predatory lenders. For VOA, Robert Carmichael has the story from Phnom Penh.
32-year-old In Sokai takes a break from her garment factory job to have lunch at her home near Phnom Penh. Last year, Sokai took out a $5,000 loan from a microfinance institution, or MFI, which is charging her 22% a year over 4 years. Some of the money went to build her house.
I borrowed $5,000 and I bought chickens, built the house, and my husband bought a boat, fishing nets, and other items.
Demand for credit has driven the microfinance industry's growth in this country of 15 million people. Like many, Sakai hadn't heard about the government's recent order that MFIs must cap interest rates at 18% for all new and refinanced loans starting April 1. But the announcement, which comes ahead of local elections this year and a national ballot in 2018, stunned the microfinance sector. Interest rate caps, in theory, protect consumers from high interest rates, increase access to finance, and make loans more affordable. But in practice, they can have the opposite effect, says Stephen Higgins of advisory firm Mekong Strategic Partners.
Ideally, we shouldn't have this cap. The interest rates in Cambodia for these small loans are actually amongst the lowest in the world. People forget that.
Capping the interest rate at 18% means MFIs will lose money from small loans. The result? Many MFIs may simply stop offering small loans, he says, with rural areas missing out on at least $1 billion a year and people forced to turn to moneylenders who charge far more. The Cambodia Microfinance Association remains upbeat, saying its members would need to cut costs and improve efficiencies. CMA chairman Huit Yeng Tong insisted small loans would still be offered. May Kalyan, an economist and an advisor to the government, says that, speaking in his personal capacity, he supports the decision in part because it should prevent smallholders in rural areas from sinking into agriculture-related debt. And he notes the microfinance sector is a small part of the financial system.
Of course, every policy is once implemented, there's some adjustment, some pro and con about this. But overall, I think in long term, it's for the sustainability of financial system, which is extremely important nowadays, because we know very well that when financial system hit, economic system will be hit as well.
The irony of the government's decision is that, according to the central bank, most borrowers were satisfied with the existing system and most made a profit from their loans, not least because MFIs charge much less than moneylenders. Robert Carmichael for VOA News, Phnom Penh.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Australia canceled a vote to ratify a decade-old extradition treaty with China. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop said the deal was in Australia's national interest. Opposition to ratification stems from concern over China's humanitarian record and reports of torture to secure confessions. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, Myanmar opens up and tourists' numbers are increasing. More visitors are flocking to the country's renowned ancient holy temples of Bagan. John Owens went there, and he reports that there's growing concern that those on the hunt for the site's famed views may have gone a step too far.
It's the cultural jewel in the crown of a country experiencing the benefits of a tourism boom. But Myanmar's ancient site of Bagan, the influx comes at a cost. home to more than 2,000 Buddhist monuments, Bagan draws hundreds of thousands of sightseers each year. Many clamber up these ancient temples in search of the ultimate view and the ultimate photo. Yet soon the sun could be setting on such sites, as concerns grow over the impact of visitors climbing the monuments.
We consider not to climb the monuments. We need to be protected because all these monuments are more than 1,000 years, so they are very fragile.
Some spots are already deemed off-limits, but calls are now growing to extend the ban to all temples, especially amid ongoing restoration efforts in the wake of a major earthquake last year. And the concern is not just among archaeologists eyeing up an upcoming bid for UNESCO World Heritage Site status for the landmarks. The growth in tourism in the wake of Myanmar's apparent move towards democracy have brought major economic benefits, not least for those who sell crafts at these temples. But in a country where Buddhist belief runs deep, religious sensitivities over these holy sites, commonly visited by the Burmese themselves, are also at stake.
There are some cases of tourists not knowing or understanding that they aren't supposed to climb or wear footwear in some restricted places. We sometimes, more or less, feel like our beliefs are being imposed upon.
But even those who are opposed to sites like this know they must tread carefully between preserving their religious and cultural heritage and attracting travellers. As part of Myanmar's dry region, and thus susceptible to food insecurity, many from the local community in Bagan have made the most of this relatively new source of income. And while those backing the ban propose moving sightseers to new viewing spots, others who continue to make a living off Bagan's allure are not so sure.
It will be bad image for the tourism. So we should not look only for the archaeological. So tourism is very important for the economy of the country.
The days of temple climbing may be numbered, but the beauty of this millennia-old site will remain, regardless. John Owens for VOA News, Bagan, Myanmar.
Developing at this hour in Asia, South Korea's maritime ministry said salvage crews found human remains near the recently raised Sewol ferry. DNA tests will be conducted to determine their identity. Bereaved family members and officials are still searching for 9 missing bodies from the 2014 disaster. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, despite what you might think, broadband internet access in the United States is not universal. There has long been a digital divide between urban and rural areas, perhaps much like the areas where you live. The small town of Greenbank, West Virginia, is home to the largest fully steerable radio telescope in the world. But things that can create electromagnetic waves near this massive telescope, such as microwave ovens and making internet connections, are banned. Some people have never known life without the internet, so VOA correspondent Lisa Bechtelitz went to Greenbank to explore a day without online access. Joy Wagner tells us about that experience.
As a visitor to Greenbank, it becomes apparent that you have to navigate the old-fashioned way, by reading road signs. That's because GPS comes to a screeching halt as you approach this West Virginia town, which has 2 churches, an elementary school, a library, and the world's largest radio telescope. Sherry manages the largest store in Greenbank. She was born here, so the lack of internet access is normal for her.
You know, we've never really had it, so most people would probably say we do it the old-fashioned way, even though to us it's not the old-fashioned way, it's just the way of living.
And on the store wall, an artifact from the past, a phone attached to a wall jack, the only way to call someone in Greenbank.
Hello, Trince, this is Sherry. Can I help you?
No modern wireless conveniences here. Greenbank is frozen in time, somewhere in the late 1950s. That's because there's a 33,000 square kilometer zone of silence. The closer you get to the telescope, the greater the restrictions. There's a 16-kilometer radius around the observatory where radio-controlled items, even toys, cannot be used.
With this equipment, I can actually look for a little minute weak signal that that could be interfering with the telescopes.
Jonah Bosserman acts as a technical policeman. If he suspects there's an unauthorized signal, he drives to the house and inspects it for prohibited devices. Telescope employees even work in a special room, much like a sarcophagus.
This is an electrical submarine, if you will. Uh-huh. No electrical waves can get, electromagnetic waves can get into this room. None of them can get out of this room.
The job of these scientists is to minimize the impact of outside interference on the radio telescope. Holstein says only once a week, when there's regularly scheduled maintenance, can some prohibited devices be allowed near the telescope. The size of a football field, the telescope is so sensitive, it could pick up signals sent from an alien world.
All the signals that we detect with the telescope so far are just generated by unintelligent stars, galaxies, things in the universe. We haven't ever detected anything from an intelligent civilization.
Local people respect the work of the scientists, and they are more than happy to live life Wi-Fi free.
You know, instead of sitting here on our phones and our gadgets, we're out fishing and hunting and going to each other's houses. And
for the latest news, residents read the weekly local newspaper. When she's looking for a phone number, Sherry reaches for the phone book. And instead of Facebook, Sherry enjoys daily conversations with her customers. In this town, everyone knows each other, and communication is face-to-face. For Lesia Bakalets, Sergei Sokolov, I'm Joy Wagner, VOA News, Green Bank, West Virginia.
Probably a sure bet that folks in Green Bank weren't listening to us on the internet, but we hope that you have, no matter what method you've chosen. Be sure to check us out on Facebook as well. Our thanks to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Jim Harmon, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Steve Miller, Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson recently underscored that human rights is integral to American foreign policy, noting that our values are our interests when it comes to human rights. In support of this interest, Congress mandates the State Department report every year on the human rights situation in countries around the world. These reports underscore our commitment to freedom, democracy, and the human rights guaranteed to all individuals around the world, including in Vietnam. While there has been some progress in recent years, there continue to be serious concerns about the human rights situation in Vietnam. The recently released human rights report for Vietnam highlights these continuing challenges. Among these were the Vietnamese government's continued restriction of citizens' political rights and fundamental freedoms of assembly, association, and expression. While many millions of Vietnamese retain access to the internet and social media sites, the government continued to exercise various forms of control over internet access. There was a significant increase in 2016 in the number of convictions of activists for peacefully expressing their views. There is also inadequate protection of citizens' due process rights, including protection against arbitrary detention. The State Department report highlighted problems of judicial independence and transparency, and detailed a number of instances over the past year where Vietnamese citizens were denied the right to a fair and expeditious trial. The Vietnamese government continued to constrain civil society in other ways as well, including by censoring the press and restricting the activities of NGOs. It is important that the government of Vietnam strengthen protection for human rights, religious freedom, and the rule of law. Doing so will bolster Vietnam's economy, help its people reach their full potential, and facilitate a deeper bilateral partnership with the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.